It's time for Windows Weekly. Paul Thurrott, Mary Jo Foley are here. There's lots to talk about. Paul's going to get, I have to warn you, a little upset because he just found out Windows Phone is going away. And our beer of the week. We'll sedate him a little later. It's all coming up next on Windows Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley, episode 605, recorded Wednesday, January 23rd, 2019. Paul's Power Apps onesie. Windows Weekly is brought to you by Sophos Cybersecurity. In an age of evolving cyber threats, you need evolved cybersecurity powered by artificial intelligence. Sophos can detect threats before they strike, killing ransomware, viruses, and other cyber threats dead in their tracks. Get a free security scan and or a free trial today at Sophos.com. And by Atlassian. Atlassian software powers the full spectrum of collaboration between IT teams and the rest of your organization. Visit Atlassian.com to find out which Atlassian tools are right for your team and give their products a try for free. It's time for Windows Weekly, the show where we cover the latest news from Windows Weekly. Two E's. Not EA.
Mary, yeah, some weeks.
Some weeks we do talk about Electronic Arts. That's Paul Thurrott. Thurrott.com. thurrott.com. Leanpub.com. That's where his books are. Mary Jo Foley, allaboutmicrosoft.com. I'm leolaporte.com. Now it's time for the show.com. Paul.
Yes, sir.
Did you give away all the sweaters?
I did. That's all I wanted to say. Last Friday, I shipped everything. I have some cool pictures of the boxes. I asked the guy from FedEx. They're so nice down there. I said, I was there for like half an hour, you know, and they print, you know, they typed in all the addresses themselves. I had asked the guy earlier, like, I could do this. You know, he said, no, we'll do it at the store. You know?
That's our job. That's what we do.
So I would hate to see people like me, but you guys, you know, they're always really nice about it. Anyway, so I heard from people who have received them, which is nice. And it
those
looks like
sweaters are pretty special. Let's be honest. That's a very special gift.
Yeah.
You can't buy those sweaters. You can buy a Surface, but you can't buy those sweaters.
Yeah.
No.
Right. So when they asked me what the value was of the sweaters, and I said zero.
Infinite.
it's, you can't buy
it. Should say it's either zero or infinite.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you could have said that.
They're priceless.
Which is cheaper.
Was that the hottest giveaway bidding was the sweater?
No. No, actually the Surface, I don't have the things in front of me, but the Surface Go was the number one. The headphones were number two, and then the sweaters.
Really?
The software codes I did separately, so I don't remember where those fell. But the interest in this particular giveaway was probably four times as big as it was for the software codes.
Hardware's big.
Yeah.
You're getting something physical free.
Yeah.
Well, good. Sweaters don't need updates four times a year. As
That's the one Microsoft product that doesn't.
They'll never crash on you. They'll always keep you warm, but never hot.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, so, I never took it out of the bag.
Last week, you talked about Cortana being decoupled from search, but that wasn't the other. That wasn't the bottom line. The other shoe dropped.
It did.
tell us all about that.
Okay. To start the story, I'm going to give you some insider baseball. Because what is the show but insider baseball, right?
Right. That's why we listen.
Exactly. So a week ago, Monday, unbeknownst to Paul and I, Microsoft had invited some journalists to campus. They got a private audience with Satya Nadella and a number of other executives. I also believe they probably saw the next HoloLens under NDA, just a guess.
Sure.
Interesting.
But at that event, which Microsoft did not publish a transcript for, we didn't really know what was happening until somebody who attended the event published a transcript as part of a paid newsletter.
Mm.
Not cool, Microsoft. Just saying.
Yep.
We shouldn't have to pay for transcripts of your events.
No.
Okay, I'm off my soapbox. So what happened was Satya Nadella was asked at this event by one of the people attending, a journalist or an analyst, hey, what about Microsoft being in the consumer space? Are you guys like serious still about it? Like, what about Cortana? And he gave a fairly direct answer about what's going to happen with her. And as we expected, she is becoming an app, not going to be a standalone digital assistant. But he also threw in a few interesting tidbits when he answered this. He started talking about speakers, and there's been various rumors that Microsoft was going to build its own speaker at some point. And he just quashed that immediately and was like, nope, we're not doing that. Then he also was asked, you know, what's the positioning and all? And he mentioned that she's also going to work with Google Assistant.
Well, which they'd like her to.
It sounds like they are planning on it, right?
In the same way that Cortana works with Alexa or Echo right now.
That's kind of the implication.
I didn't read that transcript, but the quotes I read about that part said that he basically said, I hope we can work with Google on this. Unless someone misquoted it.
Right? It's not.
Yeah. Well,
I would think it's up to them. Can they just make it a skill for Google?
Of course they could. Yeah.
I guess they could. That'd be
kind of humiliating, though.
Well,
he said, but then he also threw this in. Cortana needs to be the skill for anybody who's a Microsoft 365 subscriber, which currently is not a requirement. You should be able to use it on Google Assistant.
Yeah.
So there's a couple interesting things there. Are they going to do a deal with Google, or are they just going to publish a skill? And then what about that caveat, the Microsoft 365 subscriber?
Like, not for everybody, but...
God, I'm sorry.
No, you go ahead. It's your show. I'm just curious.
Well, I was just going to say, it seems like they're funneling everything through Microsoft 365, and him saying that makes it a new rumor of sorts that they might do a consumer version, right, of Microsoft 365. So
he definitely hinted that during this conversation
If we think that Cortana is going to require Microsoft 365, that's kind of a tough one. I mean, you could make the argument, obviously Cortana today is on Android and iOS.
Right.
Office is on Android and iOS.
Right.
Office is a lot more powerful when you're today an Office 365 subscriber. Could it follow that model? Sure. Microsoft 365 comes with Windows 10. Cortana is part of Windows 10. You can kind of go down the rabbit hole on that one. But, you know, this one's tough, right? And there's another topic here later that's going to fall into the same category. There is a growing contingent of people in the Microsoft community who care about the consumer-oriented stuff, and they just watch the stuff fall off one by one by one. You know, and it's been a tough, I don't know, decade or whatever we want to say, but... You know, mm-hmm. when you care about the consumer side of the equation, like I do, you know, it's been kind of tough. I'll point out that Microsoft, when they gave up on mobile, literally used the phrase, you know, we missed this wave. We are not going to miss the next wave. Well, I have a newsflash for you, Microsoft. This is the next wave.
I know.
And this being what I would call ambient computing. But it includes such things as talking to, in this case, speakers. But eventually this will be just, you know, a capability that's built into all kinds of things. And, you know, the natural language processing and all the stuff that goes along with that. Mm. I guess the bone I will throw out to people who care about this stuff is that there is a version of the story where Microsoft still is very successful in this space. And that is in getting Cortana and other back-end services all over the place, right?
Right.
It's not, like Leo said, it is humiliating to a degree to say, oh, you know, Cortana is now one of 16 million, you know, Alexa skills or Google Assistant skills or whatever these things are called. Yes, I mean, for sure. But, you know, the pervasive use of Microsoft technology behind the scenes, even though it's not as forward-leaning and something that we would see as consumers, is still potentially very lucrative for the company.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and we'll see. You know, I think we talked last week probably about the BMW assistant, for example, that's actually based on Cortana. So you're never going to see a Cortana logo or the name Cortana or hear Cortana in that car, but that's still the technology that's driving it.
Right. Like I had a reader ask me, so that means they're throwing in the towel on voice being the next UI. No, it doesn't mean that actually. It means they are still looking for ways to make this part of their own suite of solutions, you know, like you said, embedded into Office 365 apps and by extension into Microsoft 365. That still could be really powerful. It just will not be the same as what it has been.
This is a really one-sided spreadsheet or a chart or whatever, where, you know, you can kind of stack this stuff up, like stuff I care about on one side and stuff I don't care about on the other. And, you know, Cortana was one of those things that was very interesting because of what it was and because of the market it addressed. Mm-hmm. And now it's getting lumped back over that increasingly humongous pile of stuff that Paul does not care about.
If anybody knows what, I mean, Microsoft knows who's using Cortana.
Yeah, they do.
It sounds to me like they've said, well, no one uses it, so it's not a problem.
Belatedly. I mean, I guess I give him credit for being transparent and open about it, although he had to be asked about it for him to even mention it.
Well, he did say something. And it does sound like they're keeping it alive only because they can't promise that Echo and Google Assistant will provide good support for Microsoft products.
Yeah.
It's really a driver. It's basically a voice driver for Microsoft Windows.
Except I think you have to think about what is it going to become in the future? Because right now it's just like the other assistants. It's something you ask kind of simple questions and it gives you a simple answer. And in fact, I don't know if you've noticed this, if anybody else who has a Harman Kardon noticed this, but I feel like it's giving fewer and fewer answers lately. I don't know if that's a conscious change they're making.
Flowers for Algernon syndrome.
I'm losing my mind.
Because I think they're literally dropping off capabilities because either they're A, not being used, or they have no further intention to go out with this. It's just part of that end of life thing that, you know, they haven't really talked about, but you know, what they're focused on, I think, for this stuff is more of the back end stuff. Although, ironically, I don't think this is in the show notes, but they just announced like a smart home update for the Cortana app for Android and iOS, which is, guys, seriously, like, you got to get the messaging straight on this. I mean, it's really strange. It's
like, you know, I feel like because they have been like, either because they haven't known exactly what the positioning was going to be, or they've been trying to hide it, that it's made things way more complicated than it needed to be. I remember an interview I had with somebody on that team at Ignite, and I felt like at the time when I was talking to him, he was giving me very good answers. Like, he was saying, you know, we decided Cortana doesn't need to be this simple. You ask a simple question and we give you one answer and it's over. We want to make it, if you want to ask something more complicated, we're doing the kind of the calculations behind the scenes. So you could say, you know, what's my boss's calendar look like? And it would know who your boss was. Mm-hmm. And that's a much more advanced query. Right. So I felt like, that's where they're going to go with it. But then they also kept saying, but it's still not going to go away as a digital assistant. I'm like, well, it's being moved to a different positioning now. You guys should just say
I don't think we're going to see these smart assistant speaker things, these smart speaker things in offices per se, although in the form of speakers, you know, that people like companies are going to start putting speakers around. I don't think anyone wants people talking to things in the office, whatever, but obviously it will, you know, it is and will continue to be embedded Microsoft software and other services and so forth. But, you know, you really can draw a nice parallel here to the mobile market. I mean, what does it mean when Microsoft gives up on mobile? Well, it means their apps have to be on the popular mobile platforms of the day. And you could kind of view this in the same light. I mean, if they're essentially giving up on Cortana as a standalone assistant for consumers, especially, well, Cortana, the capabilities that, you know, she was putting out to the world have to be put out to the world in the place where people are and the places. And those places are, again, Google and Apple there are Google and Amazon ecosystems in this case. It's really the same kind of brutal math. I mean, you have to go where the customers are.
Okay. And I had another insight from that transcript. I actually paid the $10 to subscribe to a newsletter to get it, because that was the only way I could get it. So he also got asked something where he started talking about first line workers. You know, for me, that's like a big obsession of mine. I'm like, this is where they're going. This is their next big untapped market, that, and they're kind of gearing everything that way. And you know how Alex Kipman has continually said, you know, mobile phones aren't the be all end all. And he was kind of hinting like HoloLens was.
Right.
Now I know what they're thinking on that front, and it's kind of crazy. So Satya Nadella said in response to another question, we've seen from some of the first line worker installations we've done at these big companies that some companies are giving them a HoloLens instead of a phone. I was like, what?
Yeah. I mean, those have to be pretty specialized use cases.
So he said, I'm looking for his exact quote, is because of the productivity gains for service workers, that it makes a lot of economic sense, where they did not even give them a phone, but they're happy to give them a HoloLens. So this must be why they keep thinking HoloLens is going to be what leapfrogs them into the thing that succeeds phones.
There's no way that a HoloLens anything succeeds the phone. But I think we talked about this last week. There's obviously some really good vertical markets for HoloLens, and it's been successful in those places, right? Yeah. And you know, when you say this term frontline, is it frontline or first line workers? I always think of like the guy with the clipboard working at like a clothing store or something. But of course, it's much more diverse than that, right? It's the guy out on the telephone line. It's the guy on the factory floor. It's, you know, whatever. There's a bunch of these things. So if you're at retail, you know, you're not going to be walking around with a HoloLens unless you're working like a comic book store or something. But you know, and I likewise. I have wasted my life. You can't be out in the world with a HoloLens either. But there are certain, you know, like we said, niche categories where this thing doesn't make sense. I'm going to be really curious to see, I guess it's next month when they announce the next one, presumably. Yep. The positioning. And I think it's going to be a lot more concrete than it was, I guess it was 3 years ago when they first unveiled it, right? In January 2015. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's going to be interesting. But I think you're right. You've been kind of on the front line of actually both these topics. Cortana as an app, not as a standalone service. Mm-hmm. And the front line, first line, front line.
Just call me a first line reporter.
First line reporter worker.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's...
One more thought before I forget. Cortana is going to figure into the HoloLens, right?
Yeah.
Like, that's not going to go away. That's the way you talk to the HoloLens.
There's also this kind of thing on the side, which is this Chromebook-like thing that Microsoft's working on. Yeah. You know, that system is a lot closer to what you would have on a HoloLens, right? In the sense that it's a super simple UI, and it only runs store apps and, you know, web apps, I'm sure. And those two things could be semi-related. When you talk about a device that might be used in lieu of a phone in some situation at work, I could also see that kind of a thing. And in both cases, what we're talking about is something that ditches the kind of legacy Windows desktop past and only runs these new apps and maybe is kind of almost kiosky or special purpose design for whatever the thing is that person is doing. You know, a phone, you could get distracted by and go do other things. But with these other devices, you're doing the thing. You know?
Yeah. It's like having a Kindle, right? You're in that experience.
You're in that mode.
Right.
So we will be covering the HoloLens announcement from Mobile World Congress.
Oh.
Even though it is 8 in the morning, my time, on a Sunday.
Right.
We'll see Paul in the audience. He'll be like doing all these crazy things.
Maybe Alex Kipman will steal my laptop.
Yeah. Ooh, exciting.
Yeah, like Panos.
And Nadella's speaking at that, isn't he?
He is.
That's interesting. Oh, yeah. That's why that was the thing that put us over the top as far as as long as they stream it. If they don't stream it, we won't. But if as long as they stream it, I thought, you know, if Nadella's going to talk, this is more than just, you know, this is something, right?
Right. If you need commentary from home, I'll be around.
Good. You're signed up.
All right.
It's signing you up.
It's sort of a mobile thing, right? It's Microsoft is super focused on this thing being untethered. You know, they love that aspect of it. So I guess that's technically mobile.
And AI, right? Because it's going to have the AI chip in it.
It's really, though, about a new UI, isn't it? I mean, that's really what it is, isn't it?
Yeah, new UI. It's also
the holographic interface and all that.
Yeah.
I think though, Paul was kind of hinting at this. They'll talk about business heavily with this thing, right? Yeah. Like they'll say, here's all the business apps. It's like an IoT device. It's doing processing at the edge. I think you're going to hear all that, too. Because Julia White is speaking, too, who's the corporate VP of Azure.
Right.
I mean, it was kind of a fun demo, but I would not expect to see something like that video game where the alien insect things come out of the holes in the wall. I mean, the Minecraft demo was fun, but what this device is about.
They may throw in something like that just to make it fun, you know, but.
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
I don't know.
I want the job where I get to have to play Minecraft and, you know.
In 3D.
Yeah, but I played Minecraft. Well, of course, this is HoloLens would be better, but I played Minecraft once in one of those like Gear VR things, and I almost lost my lunch. It was terrible.
Oh, jeez.
It was just awful.
Yeah, don't spin around too fast.
Oh, it's bad enough.
I have such a weak stomach.
Didn't you have to kind of...
It's a good thing these bricks are green. All right, I'm sorry. Took that a little too far. What is BET?
What does that stand for?
No, it
doesn't stand for anything anymore. It used to stand for British Educational something something, but now it's just BET, and it's not all caps anymore. It's just
it's not
BET. Yeah, like ARM. You know, like ARM used to be ARM. ARM is now just a word. The R and the M are lowercase. It's the same with BET, but
right.
Nobody noticed.
The BET show. Yeah.
So it's the biggest.
It's an
worldwide educational
technology show. Yeah.
Yeah.
So the ET stands for extraterrestrial.
Yep. That's right.
That's right. It.
It's moved past that.
Ah, that's why they don't want to call it that. Yeah. It's more than that.
Yeah.
Cool. So what about it? I don't bring it up.
So what about
for that? Nothing.
What about that?
No,
what about that?
You know, every year Microsoft goes to BET and they highlight a lot of OEM devices because what they're trying to show is, you know what? There's not just Chromebooks out there, guys. There's also these lower cost Windows PCs that students can use, and they're pretty awesome these days. They support pen and touch and in some cases, Hello. So that every year they trot out some OEM devices. This year there were 7. Three from Lenovo, 3 Acers, and a Dell. The lowest cost one started at $189 for the 2018 model of a Lenovo device. And it went up to about $320 for the highest end one for schools. That was their main, kind of like their main thing that they showed there. Oh, and the pen. Paul knows more about the pen than me.
Oh, and the pen. Well, and also the many Microsoft apps and services that were updated that are aimed toward education, Minecraft, Teams for Education, and Microsoft 365 for Education, learning tools, and so on. I mean, it's actually kind of a ton of stuff, but a couple of the more innovative things here. First of all, you know, if you go back in time 2 years, we went to that May event where they announced Surface Laptop back in 2017. They also had some other education laptops there, and they were all terrible little beater boxes that nobody would ever want to own. And there's obviously always going to be some of that in education. These things have to be spill-proof and drop-proof and, designed to be handled all day long by kids who don't care. And they are, but they're starting to get nicer. And as Mary Jo kind of said, they're getting some of these advanced capabilities that we know from Windows on like truly decent computers. And there was two things related to Windows Ink that I thought were really interesting. One is Microsoft has a new smart pen for, I think it's just for K-12, but it's for education. It's a smaller pen, thicker barrel, sturdier tip, and it's much less expensive than Surface Pen, but it's completely compatible with Surface Pen. So if you have a Surface Go or any other Surface PC, it will work fine. They also told me at the time, and I've now corroborated this or had this confirmed, I guess, that it would also work with some selection of third-party computers. And so when the person I spoke to ahead of the show told me this, I kind of paused the conversation. I said, I've never heard of this. What are you talking about? And what they said was that Microsoft licensed the technology behind the Surface Pen to third-party PC makers. And it seems like this is something that would be right at the top of my head. I this was news to me. But
I had never
actually
heard
that. Yeah. Well, they announced it actually a couple of years ago.
Oh, they did? Huh.
And this is true. It's actually true. And so there is some selection of PCs out in the world, HP, Dell, Lenovo, whatever they are, where the digitizer and the screen is compatible with the one in Surface, and that means you can interchange the pens. So I don't have a list of those computers, but if you had a Lenovo, blah, 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 whatever it is, and it is compatible, you could use a Surface Pen with it if you wanted to, and vice versa. So that was kind of news to me, but that's cool. And that helps in the education market, especially because this new Microsoft Classroom Pen will also be compatible with the system. And that's great.
So can I make a comment on the pen, this new pen? So it's supposedly designed for the Surface Go, which is interesting, right? That's the primary use case.
Yeah, I mean, and actually the Surface Go is a great device for education.
Yeah, right. Yep. And then when I saw it, I thought it was a crayon.
Yeah. Apple's education pencil kind of looks like a crayon too.
Yeah, I was like, wait, is that a pen?
Kids did crayons.
What it reminded me of was the giant pen that they have for Surface Hub looks like one of those extra big Sharpies.
Yeah.
And it almost looks like looks like one of those, but shrunk down.
Yeah.
I don't know. Anyway, they're 40.
Also, you have to be an educational institution to buy this, right? Like you can't be a consumer and buy this thing.
I hope they change that. That doesn't actually make any
sense. Yeah, I know. But, I thought that was weird.
Kids at home might want to use this thing. But
Apple did the same thing.
Yes, it's $40.
Interesting. Apple did the same thing with their education pencil at first. You could only buy.
Yeah, right. And then they later made it available to everyone. Yeah. So hopefully they do that. The cost on this thing is $40 versus $100 for a Surface Pen.
That's why.
But you have to buy it in bulk. So it's like, that's a box of 20. But that's how schools would buy them. So that's still, it's a much better price.
You have to buy a box
but the other
of 20.
One,
that's funny.
This is kind of amazing too, is Lenovo has a new version of their 300E or E300 laptop, which has a screen digitizer on it for a pen. And it does actually have one of those little pens you can put in a little garage. It's kind of tiny. But there's I don't know how they do it exactly. I don't know if it's like a layer over the screen or however it works, but you can actually do Windows Ink with a number 2 pencil right on the screen.
What?
Yeah.
So it's kind of like the cheapest.
I know, it's crazy. Don't encourage the kids to do that.
No, you can do it. It's designed for this.
Then the next thing they use is a Sharpie.
Well, okay. Yeah. Look, I'm not.
They played it up as because people lose the pen all the time, right? And they were like, in case you lose your pen, you could use a real pencil.
Yeah,
or a crayon, or a Sharpie, or a ballpoint pen, or a fountain. I'd like to use fountain.
No, it has
pens.
To be a number 2 pencil.
Oh, okay. See, that's the problem. Wherein lies the problem?
Sure. That's if you like those hard pencils, it's not going to work.
It's going to be a number 2.
That's number 2.
2B.
Medium hardness.
No erasers, please. Class. Now, Harvey, that's not funny. Don't use your magic marker, Harvey.
We talked about this before. Rightly, I remember the guy from, you know his name, I can't remember. But the guy from, that MSNBC show that used to write with an erasable Sharpie on his Mac screen.
Oh, God.
Remember that guy? That guy with the crazy hair?
What a terrible idea. You're not talking about
Kramer. He used
Kramer,
to drive me crazy.
Jim Cramer?
No. He was a tech guy. He was like a real nerdy looking.
Oh, yeah. I remember that. Yeah.
But he used to have, it was like, you know, the dry erase version probably. But he, right on the screen, it was like a CRT back then.
Please don't.
And I'd be like, stop.
Please don't. That's got alcohol in it. Yeah. Ugh. But you can buy them used from MSNBC now, right? Slightly used.
Exactly.
Those screens. Good deal.
Yeah. You know, they did talk a lot about like Teams and some of the VR apps that they're making available for free for certain people. And the one thing they didn't talk about, I was kind of surprised, was Intune for education, because I still feel like one of the weakest links for Microsoft in schools is the manageability of PCs. Like they're still way harder to manage and deploy and provision than Chromebooks.
Yeah.
And I felt like they were kind of going that way with Intune for education and thinking about how to make that easier. But now they've never said anything about it since, I don't think.
I think there's I don't remember the name of it, but at that May event, I just referenced, you know, Terry Myers at the time showed off some kind of way you could walk around the room with USBs and USB keys and quickly provision computers. There's a giant gulf between that and Intune for Education, right?
So there is. Right.
Intune for Education is for those educational institutions like colleges that are basically enterprises because of the number of users, and they need dedicated IT staff, and they have whatever resources they have. I think that the Chromebook threat thus far has been to the other end of the equation, and that seems to be the focus of this stuff. If you look at the announcements, it's not 100%, but I bet the majority or over half of the announcements were directly K through 12 related. And this is the part of the population that is like cash strapped public schools with minimal or no IT staff. And Intune would have to get, a lot simpler for those guys. You're right. I mean, it's just,
I guess maybe not Intune, I shouldn't have said, but just manageability of these PCs.
No, but you're right. They didn't announce anything with regards to manageability other than basic capabilities and some of the apps teachers would use to manage their students' assignments and homework and so forth. But no, as far as like actual device management, there was nothing. But that said, this kind of ties back to the Cortana thing. And once again, I will be the sunshiny guy on the show. And to say, if you're looking for a little bit of a ray of hope, because I know there are a lot of people out there who are concerned that Microsoft is giving up on consumer and one by one, you know, they all kind of fall off. I think education provides a really interesting case study for how this company can turn things around pretty quickly, because it was almost exactly 2 years ago. I wrote a story that was basically probably tied to the show, I guess. You know, Microsoft cannot afford to give up on education. And the reasons are obvious. I mean, you have this generation of kids growing up. If they grow up on Chromebooks and Google services, well, guess what? That's what they're going to expect to have when they go into the workforce, especially if they like those things. You know, that kind of trend is what led to the consumerization of IT, where in the old days, people were, you know, super gluing USB ports because they didn't want anyone to plug in their iPod and, you know, take information off the computer at work. And so it's been a real giant flip there, and that can keep happening. So, you know, Microsoft jumping back into education in a big way is really interesting. And I just the sheer amount of stuff that they've done, it's actually kind of mind-boggling to have it all laid out in front of you. You know, this stuff that they announced at the show, by and large, I would say almost to a one, except for maybe that pen, are updates to things they already had. But that's because for the past 2 years, they've been releasing all kinds of new stuff. You know, Teams for Education, Microsoft 365 for Education, Minecraft for Education wasn't technically new, but they've added a bunch of stuff there. You know, they offer like 500 free courses through Minecraft for students, for teachers to help their students get started. You know, just is free. You know, Office 365 for Education is free for students and educators. It's astonishing. I mean, whatever happens. They're actually ahead of Google, by the way. When you look at installed base and that kind of thing, Google released some numbers. Microsoft released some numbers. You can compare some of them. There are almost twice as many students using Office 365 for Education as using for Education, and so on. But, you know, obviously a lot of the growth has been on the Chrome side, and that's the thing Microsoft's been working on for the past couple of years. And I'd say every 6 months, not quite every quarter, but every once in a while, they'll come out with the latest report. Here's how we're doing, you know, how Windows has grown in education. And I think the number is something to the tune of, I think it's almost exactly 1 million new Windows PCs go online in education every month.
Wow.
You know, so that, you know, I'm not saying there's going to be a huge comeback in a consumer, but when they perceive a market to be important, and they clearly have with education, they really have gone after it in a very diverse and meaningful way. And it would be interesting for them to do that in consumer as well.
Chris Capasolo, when he was on our show, kind of made that link, right? He was saying, when we asked him about, are you guys getting out of consumer, he definitely talked about the importance of students and education, and they can just let that market go.
The problem with consumers, when you think of the consumer market, you think of devices and flashy, fun stuff, you know, TVs and TV services and stuff. And that's not going to be where Microsoft is, right? They are in video games. Video games is humongous. And I think most of the other stuff is going to be the stuff we already see and know about. It's going to be this OneDrive, Office 365, you know, the kind of personal productivity stuff. It is still a strength for them, you know, so.
Yep.
Yeah, we'll see.
Let's take a little break. Our show today brought to you by Sophos Security. I know you know the name Sophos. For years we've been talking about Sophos. They have really advanced technology, basically advanced AI called deep learning. It works like millions of connected neurons in the human brain. I think that's a neural network, right? To interpret data, respond to threats. This is how you solve the problem of, you know, the pitched battle between the bad guys and the good guys. You know, the good guys will get a little better, so the bad guys get a little better. The good guys. The only way you can do this is by getting better faster than the bad guys. And what better way to do it than deep learning? It's actually helped Sophos become number one. They were just ranked number one by an independent security test done by SE Labs. You can go look at the results. They had the best protection ratings across the board. That's both for large enterprises and small businesses. We use Sophos here. We use Sophos hardware. They recently took, though, this technology they've been putting in enterprises and started to make a premium version available for Macs and PCs. Now, you know me. I don't talk about antiviruses. I don't think you need one. This is more than that. This is a very different solution. This is real-time protection, the kind of real-time protection your business has from intruders, from ransomware, malicious software, hacking attempts. This is not an antivirus. This is essentially a barrier, a giant fence. It's easy to use, even if it's just a single laptop or the entire network at your home, or even as you travel around the world. You can sign up for a single account with Sophos Home. Protect all the Macs and PCs in your home from a single console. It's cloud-based, so you can also use it, now this is wild, to keep your relatives secure, even if they're thousands of miles away. So I can order this from my mom in Rhode Island and maintain her security from here. This is, you see what we got here, basically, which is these managed IT providers, technologies coming down to the home. And honestly, that's what's happened with networks, home networks. When you first got a home computer, it was just you and the computer. But now we're all running routers and switches and Wi-Fi. And suddenly we're IT professionals. So it's about time we got the tools that the real IT professionals and security experts use to protect business networks in our home. It's very easy to use. You don't have to be an IT professional, but you get the security that they get. You can remotely manage security for your family across the country. You can clean up threats. You can keep their systems safe. Sophos is simple. In fact, that's their tagline. Sophos is security made simple. You do it all from the browser. You can start securing your systems today. Whether you're a home user or a large enterprise or even a small or medium business like ours, we use Sophos, and Sophos is the best. They have you covered. Some of the largest businesses in the world use Sophos to stay protected from the ransomware attacks that devastated everybody. Remember last year? Third-party reviewers consistently rank Sophos among the best cybersecurity providers. We've said that. Steve said that. With synchronized security, this is so cool. You can manage all your Sophos products from a single cloud-based console, no matter where you're using it. Get a free trial today or a free security scan. They always offered that, and that's always been something we've recommended at Sophos.com. S-O-P-H-O-S. S-O-P-H-O-S. Sophos.com. Security made simple with Sophos. Really glad to have them as a sponsor. It's a great product. Back to Paul and Mary Jo. It's time to talk about, I believe, something we like to call Windows 10. A little something.
Yep. You and I know. The never ending saga of the October 2018 update. So, Microsoft announced, I guess it was last week, that that update has entered what I will call the final phase of deployment, meaning that it is now broadly available to everyone, not just seekers, or what they were, I think they could refer to them as expert users.
Hello, seekers.
Yeah. And so, you know, this will follow the traditional staged rollout where the known good configurations come first. And what it basically means is that without going to check for updates, you could get this update now, right? So it only took about 3 months. It's kind of a it's got to be a record of some kind, not the good kind. But yeah, it's finally rolling out. And I would imagine it will be fully deployed just in time for the next update, which is expected in April, I guess.
Perfect timing.
Yeah.
Yep.
Nothing left.
I still don't have it on my Surface Go. I checked today to see if it was there.
Really?
1809. Not
really?
Yet.
Really?
You would think the Microsoft stuff would be the first,
the
right?
First stuff.
These are understood configurations.
Wow. That's hysterical.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Wasn't a good update, that one. No. It was a rough one.
Well, fortunately, Windows 10 is entering its final phase of deployment.
So they say. They haven't yet given the go flag to businesses, I noticed. And I wonder how long
that is. You better explain. That is a term of art.
A term of art?
A term of art. I don't know who this art guy is, but that's what they say in the legal profession. You know, when they say, you know, qui bono, they say, well, that's a term of art. Final phase of deployment.
No,
clearly
it just
doesn't
means
mean the
other
same
words,
thing to you that it does to Microsoft.
Before they were tricking people to install it. Now they're just giving it to you whether you want it or not.
Seeker or not, you're getting it.
Yeah.
It's being deployed.
Yeah.
Whether you like it or you're not.
Okay. I haven't checked my for updates, though, because I'm still scared. I'm like, I'm going to let as much time go by.
I mean, honestly, I think it's fine.
I haven't had any problems with it ever.
Yeah, but it's also not disruptive from a UI or UX perspective. It's mostly fit and finish type stuff.
True.
Which I like, and you know, it's.
I know. Yeah.
It's been 3 months. Well, you're probably okay.
You saw yesterday another cumulative update, which is a bunch of fixes went out for 1809. Pretty big bunch of fixes. So yeah, that.
Yeah, it seems like that kind of thing has only escalated, you know.
It has, yeah.
And I don't mean that in some kind of a cynical, you know, we'll fix it later kind of view. But the truth is, every month there are multiple updates like this, and it just seems like there's more and more of them now.
It does. I mean, before it was like mostly on Patch Tuesday, and then sometimes another Tuesday. But now it's like almost every Tuesday.
Yeah, now it's like, is it a day that ends in Y? Yeah, what do we got? Yep. Let's send something out, you know?
Yeah. But I want to ask Paul this question. So there have been, let's switch now to 19H1, also we're calling it 1903, because that's likely what it will be called when it comes out.
Sure.
So there have been, I think, three builds at least for Windows Server 1903, which is the next semi-annual channel build of Windows Server.
Yep.
But when you look at the release notes for these, they're such esoteric features, at least to me. I mean, I'm not an IT pro, but I don't even write this up because I'm like, I don't even know what this is. Like yesterday, there was a new server build. And the main feature...
dark mode. I don't understand why. Why wouldn't you want to write about
center,
that?
The admin center got dark mode.
Yep.
Right. But like, here's the feature that came in yesterday's build. Composable stacked code integrity policies for supporting multiple code integrity policies. Like, I'm like, I can't even write that. I don't even know what that is.
This is one of those moments where I'm so happy I don't cover this stuff anymore. Here's my take. And this is a mile high and a mile away because, like I said, I don't really actively follow this too deeply. But I really think that Microsoft views the on-prem servers as what a lot of people wish they would view Windows client as, which is like, look, this is for legacy on-prem installs. It's not the majority. It's not the focus of the future. And we're just going to support what you're already running. You know, we're going to make it safer and more secure, obviously, and add, you know, functionality that makes sense, especially if it's kind of, you know, hybrid cloud functionality. Mm-hmm. But, I don't mean to say like it's in maintenance mode per se, but I think these releases are going to get less big, you know, and have, and will continue to do so, and on purpose and by design, you know.
Same.
And I think that's appropriate for this product.
I do too.
It's fine.
I do too. The thing that is changing a lot though is the Windows Admin Center, which is that GUI administration tool. Every update they do to this has a lot of new features, and people seem to love it. I mean, like we joked about the dark theme, but there's a lot of other things that are in the latest build
sure.
for that. So I feel like they're putting a lot of a lot of push on that, right? Instead of the server itself, more in the administration console for it.
Well, because, my understanding of that tool, and it's been a while since I've looked at it, so I've never seen dark mode, for example. But, again, you've got this thing that Microsoft will call like a plane of glass that can look at multiple machines. Some of them might be local data center stuff. Some of them might be up in Azure, and you're doing things to groups of servers or what are essentially servers. And that's something a lot of people will and should do from Windows 10, right? Mm-hmm. Not directly on the server. So it makes sense that there'd be a focus on that kind of thing. That's how people will interact with the server by and large.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So we don't have a lot to tell you about Server 1903, but they continue to release builds of it, and it will probably also come out around April, start rolling out, like the client probably will.
Has there been any update on the downloadable version of 1809?
Yep.
Hyper-V
1809, the ISO and the Evaluation Center is out now. They released it the day after Windows Weekly.
Okay.
Yep. Hyper-V, though, I don't think was also released, but I am not 100% sure on that. So, yeah, I know we had people asking us about that. And then today, I kind of thought we were going to get a 19H1 test build right before Windows Weekly, mm-hmm. but that did not happen.
Hmm. Right. I guess it's technically still possible, right? Sometimes those come late in the day.
It is. Yep. Especially, I think they'll do it today because Bug Bash starts today for 19H1. So I bet they will.
Would you call that the final phase of pre-release deployment?
I would call it that.
Tell us, what is it? What do they do at the Bug Bash? Is that a party?
No, sadly.
They have quests. Remember we talked about quests? They have tasks that they want the insiders to focus on before the build is done and have certain things they want them to try to help them fix. It's kind of like the last phase as they head towards RTM, which we're not supposed to call RTM.
Right.
Yeah.
This indicates that what they're focusing on is fit and finish.
Yes. Yep.
Yeah, it worked out great for the past two releases, so.
I know. You know what? It feels like they're kind of taking the cautious route this time, and they're like, you know what? We didn't roll out a whole ton of big features for this thing, but maybe that's okay.
Do you notice anything different in the process that maybe in response to last time?
They have not really spoken to this, have they?
No. The one thing I have noticed is it feels like sometimes they're putting more things into the release preview, not the build itself, but like when they have bug fixes or things they want the insiders to test before it goes out more widely.
At some point, Microsoft should consider this Bug Bash thing to be the norm for Fast Ring. Maybe there needs to be a ring just for this. Like, we want to do targeted testing of specific features or parts of the OS. And if you want to keep getting these builds, you need to be part of that. I mean, I feel like a lot of people in the insider program install the builds and that's, they run them and they like having the new thing and they're not necessarily participating in the program, in any explicit way. I do that for sure. I mean,
Backtracking a bit to your question on the server, Hyper-V server, is it available now for people? Yes, it is, says Taro Elhonen. Yes.
Okay. Good.
Yep. So, we don't have anything much to tell you on 19H1 today because there's no new build so far.
Somebody in the chat room said, when you said the Bug Bash starts today, CR1 said, I thought she said bloodbath, and what bothers me, what bothers me, it didn't bother me. That was,
finally.
Like, oh,
bloodbath. We need that bloodbath.
One of the heads going to roll around here.
Yeah. It's time for the Windows 10 bloodbath.
It's a little bit
marching on Redmond. Grab your pitchforks.
Madame la Guillotine, she's ready for you.
Started building 34, and we're going to break out from there.
Yeah.
And I don't know, maybe I'm looking at the wrong notes, but it says Windows Phone update here. That can't be right.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so before we begin this segment of the show, I will just warn listeners, the gong is standing by.
And I will warn listeners that the gong will not be, it will not be necessary.
Thank God we have split screen. That's all I can say. On the left, it's Paul Thurrott in the blue trunks. Go ahead, Paul.
So may I begin as the voice of reason?
You may begin. The voice of reason, ladies and gentlemen.
Wow, talk about stacking the deck. And can we let the insane guy talk seconds? Let me just say something normal before he starts blathering.
The notes, I got to fix it. But Okay. Late last week, a bunch of people started republicizing a date, which we have known for some time. Windows 10 Mobile will no longer be supported, the operating system for Windows Phone, by Microsoft for free as of December 10th of this year. This date's been known for a while. But for some reason, a new round of stories came out last week and set off kind of a chain reaction of everyone panicking again about this. There was a new interesting bit, though. Microsoft updated a support page and actually said on it, Microsoft is recommending users go to Android or iOS. This is kind of the final word, guys. If you've been holding out thinking, hey, what about Andromeda? What about this? What about that? They're telling you now, they're giving you explicit written instructions. Don't wait around. Go to iOS or Android.
It's the new Microsoft. Earlier today, Microsoft said, stop using Cortana. Go to Amazon Echo.
Products.
Yeah.
Well, dear Windows fans, stop using Windows.
I didn't give you the beginning of that sentence because it's so bizarre that it was on the support page. With the Windows 10 Mobile OS end of support, we recommend customers move to a supported Android or iOS device. Microsoft's mission statement is to empower every person and every organization on the planet to achieve more. And this mission statement compels us to support our mobile apps on those platforms and devices. So they actually use a mission statement to like back up why they were doing this, which is bizarre.
We don't feel that our mission statement applies to the people using our own products. So please stop using it. I don't think these instructions could be more explicit.
I know.
And yet, here's the problem. Every time something like this comes up, I am deluged by messages from every single person who still uses a Windows phone, feels the need to tell me that they're still using Windows Phone. And I cannot stand this. I hate hearing from these people. I feel bad for them. I think they're misguided. I think they're making a mistake. But that's actually not the central issue. That stuff is all true. But the reason this bothers me so much is that I really bet big on Windows Phone myself. I wrote books about it. I wrote the first ever book about Windows Phone. I feel that I was part of the problem. You know, I supported this much longer than I should have. And in doing so, I did not do the right thing by the people who read the stuff that I write or watch the podcast or whatever it is. And so what happens now is people come back to me and they're like, oh, you hate Windows Phone, or you used to be this big Windows Phone supporter. Now you hate Windows Phone, or you hate people that use Windows Phone. It's like, no, I belatedly came to understand that I was doing the wrong thing by supporting this thing that was never going to succeed. And, you know, in 2015, when they made it very clear that this was happening, I tried to make sure that everyone who was paying attention understood what was happening correctly, because there were other Windows blogs that were telling people everything was fine, that these things aren't going away, that they're not dropping support. They're going to keep improving it. It's, you know, it's just built as part of Windows 10. You don't have anything to worry about. And that was not true. And I took a great personal responsibility for this. The fact that there are still people out there who are insisting, you know, that this thing is fine for them, or it does everything they need, or it's better in some way than Android or iOS, which is patently untrue and has been untrue for years, is troubling to me. The fact that I might be part of the reason for that kind of thinking is personally disturbing to me, and I'm just trying to correct it. So that's what that is. That's all it is. It bothers me at a deeply personal level when people are just so insistent on. Not, I don't. The fact that they're using the thing, it's like whatever. But they have to talk about it, and it's like just do it in private. Like I don't, you know. Yeah, you're a pariah. I get it. I mean, and I'm sorry, but you know the world has moved on, and they're not listening to this either, right? Microsoft, like Mary Jo said, had come out explicitly and said, "Look, dear God, use an iPhone or an Android handset," and these people are still like, "No, I'm not going to do it. You can take away Microsoft Pay. You can take away Cortana. You can take away a Groove. You can take away apps. You can take away like whatever. I am not giving this thing up." And it's like, okay.
Yep. Including, by the way, many Microsoft employees. Like we always talk about how many Microsoft employees use iOS or Android. So? There's still tons of them who use Windows phones.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, you know, and you had said, we had this conversation on Twitter. You had said something like, you know, like these are our people. And I, yeah, they're not though. Not really. Right. Not really. and what I mean by that is it's nostalgia. It's not. Like our people are using modern Microsoft services and apps and you know, I on whatever device they choose, you know, Microsoft doesn't make phones anymore.
I didn't know you had gone this deep in your analysis of this. I thought you were just kind of being like, oh,
yeah,
no,
I know that. I know. That's why I said, you said, I'm going to break out the gong. And I'm like, you're not going to need it. It's not, this isn't a rant about these people per se. It's rather the fact that I think some of them exist because of me. And I'm
I had no idea you were thinking it that way.
I know. I know.
Yeah. I mean, when I said these are our people, I meant, you know, we've done a bunch of live shows where we say to people in the audience, you know, what are you guys using for phones and how many people are using Windows Phone? And so many people in the audience are using it. And I'm like, wow, really? Like both you and I were big advocates.
It's like wearing a Captain America T-shirt to a Comic Con or something. You know, it's like it's like this. I mean, even the people who were beating the drum on this stuff weren't really using Windows phones. You know,
a lot of people.
And I'm not trying to be a jerk to anyone else who does what we do, but I mean, there's a lot of outright lying along those lines. And it's
jerk.
Yeah, there were. Look,
it is exactly like wearing a Captain Marvel T-shirt. It's pretty funny.
No, I use Windows Phone Honest.
Oh, no, here it is.
Here it is.
And
see?
Then the iPhone falls out. Right. Well, I mean, when I navigate in the car, I use Google Maps. I'm not an idiot.
When I want to do anything, I use it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, no, anything important. It's always on a phone. Yeah.
Yeah.
I love the games that came out 5 years ago. I still play those all the time. They're excellent. You know, like, I just you know, Microsoft, when they entered the phone business again, you know, with Windows Phone 7, they had such great innovative ideas and it was such a good idea. And what history has shown is just that it didn't work. Yeah. And the reason it didn't work is because it was people-centric, like they said. None of the big brands out there, none of the big services out there want anything people-centric. They want it to be them-centric. Mm-hmm. They don't want Facebook as a nameless thing that you can share to from some other thing. They want you to run Facebook. And that was the failure of Windows Phone. It was, you know, that and the three times they changed platforms, you know. And also, by the way, you know, I don't know where I wrote this, but, you know, when Windows 8 came out, we talked about a little something like this a couple of weeks ago. You know, instead of taking Windows Phone and adding it to Windows, they took the ideas from Windows Phone and made something completely different, incompatible, and not as good. When you look at what the other major platform makers are doing today, Apple and Google, they're doing what Microsoft could have done in 2012. Yeah. They're adding their mobile platform to their desktop. They had it 6 years ago. They could have done this.
Politics, company politics.
Insular stupidity, and that's just a tragedy to me. You know, as someone who cares about Windows. So it's right. Like our people. Like when I think of our people, like. I hope our people understand our people, you know, the group that we are part of.
Yeah.
The tragedy that is Windows Phone, it absolutely is one. The tragedy that Microsoft didn't integrate it with Windows as Windows 8 instead of doing what they did. The years that we've been set back because of that. The fact that we may never literally recover from this is a tragedy. And so every time this comes up, it's like just being stuck in the side again. It's like, yes, I know it's awful. Like it's just awful. To me, this is the worst thing that's ever at Microsoft, you know?
Yeah.
That's all.
Yep. Yeah. No, I'm glad you explained it because when you started, when we had the little Twitter convo, I'm like, oh, geez, yeah. Dude, let go.
It's just amazing. I literally say to people, I am begging you to stop talking about this. And then they keep going. It's like, I don't understand.
I feel like they just want us to say, okay, I understand. That's why I put the little cartoon of Charlie Brown and Lucy with the psychiatric box.
Oh, So in this cartoon, it's very clear to me that Mary Jo is Lucy, who is both giving psychiatric help to Charlie Brown, who is me, and, by the way, is the one pulling the football away when he wants to kick it.
Exactly.
a little bit of both.
Yeah. Sides. No, I mostly meant like we're there to help people. No, I'm just saying,
I looked at that
stage.
And I saw us. You know, like I sort of saw it as a kind of a funny cartoon.
I didn't mean it that way.
Us. No, I know you didn't, but that's I saw that and I was like, this is funny because this is kind of this. You could see it this way too.
No, I just meant I think people want us to be with them as they kind of okay. Yeah. Like I've had so many people tweet to me. Look, I'm weighing iOS or Android. I'm like, well, don't ask me. You already know what I'm going to tell you because I hate Apple. So don't ask me about that.
Oh, no, I get that all the time. That's a tough one. I mean, both systems have their pros and cons and all that. But I'm not going to sit here on the Titanic and play the violin. We're getting in the boat. You know, I feel bad about what happened to the Titanic, but it's time to leave the boat. You know, and I'm sorry, but at this point, the boat has already hit the bottom of the ocean and parts of it have floated back up to the top and everyone who's in the water is dead. I mean, I'm sorry. Like it's this, you know, like Windows Mobile is leaving support in whatever time frame, whatever it's November. Guys, it was killed 3 years ago. Not 1 year ago, not 2 years, three years ago. They telegraphed this.
Yeah.
Three.
No, I've had people say, well, I don't care if I get any security updates. I'm just going to keep using it. I'm like, well, good luck.
Yeah. I mean, you've pretty much just, decided to check out there, you know. So there's a whole wonderful world of improvements that have happened since then. You might want to take a look at them. Yeah. You know, that's all I'm saying.
I just say to people, look, if you really think you're going to miss the experience of Microsoft apps and services, go to Android, use the Microsoft launcher and use a bunch of Microsoft apps on it. It's not the same. You don't have your live tiles, it's the next best.
Actually, part of the point is it's not the same, right? So people say, well, I want to have live tiles, and Android is one of the big ones I hear all the time. Mm-hmm. And aside from the kind of infrastructure needs of that, right? This is something that would have to be supported at the OS level, right? For live updates to bubble up on these tiles and for it to work across all of the apps that are available in Android or some number of them. Live tiles failed too, guys. Like these ideas, which had their, again, pros and cons, obviously there are certain things about them that are really neat. There's a reason they have not been copied anywhere. Mm. And there's also a reason why Microsoft is not doing them in the Microsoft launcher. So the thinking on mobile UX has evolved. Microsoft came out, what year was that? 2010, I think, 2010 with Windows Phone 7, with some like legit fresh thinking, but they didn't really, you can tell they didn't really talk to anyone else about it. Like, hey, Facebook, hey, Twitter, hey, whoever, Flickr, you know, how do you guys feel about it? Look at this thing we're going to do. It's really innovative, you know. What they would have heard is, I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think so. You can't just go into this and assume like you build it and they're just going to come.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Like UWP.
That's a great example. But, you know, again, there was a magic moment there. I guess, you know, when you think back to when they were starting development of Windows 8, when Windows Phone 7 had just completed development. There was the platform. It was right there. All you had to do was use it. You didn't have to copy it or change it a little bit or, you know, make some goofy thing of it. All you had to do was bring it over. It would have been super easy to adapt those apps to work full screen on a PC. Super easy. And they didn't do it. And here we are.
Here we are today.
You drop off the 5 cents that I owe you.
Here you go.
Miscellany. We didn't need the gong, by the way. You could put that away now.
I know. I'm impressed, Paul. Sweet,
pretty darn
I'm impressed.
Sweet.
Yeah. So I have a thing later in the tip about this Microsoft Edge thing, so I'll get to that. But this Microsoft improving affordable housing in the Seattle area is very similar in the sense that Microsoft has created this little problem, and the problem is you can't afford to buy a house anywhere near its campus in Redmond because all these Microsoft millionaires and well-to-do Microsoft people are jacking up house prices everywhere. So there's not enough housing. There's certainly no affordable housing to be had. And people have to move further and further away from the campus. And typically in a city, you know, you would see that happen in the city. And then the suburbs would kind of become affluent as you go out. But this bubble is happening like in the suburbs because that's where Microsoft is. Although thanks to Amazon, it's happening in the city now too. So Microsoft decided they would donate and or loan up to $500 million to address these issues. They're going to support existing affordable housing. They're going to try to push towns to build more affordable housing. But, you know, this is like a problem they created. Like, this is like Microsoft selling an antivirus program, which, by the way, they tried to do about 15 years ago. you know, because the thing they made is not secure enough. Like, They did this to the area. You know, one of the things I pointed out, I think, in that article was that, you know, when Amazon announced they were going to have another corporate headquarters somewhere else in the United States, and they had that kind of silly contest, basically, where different cities could trip over each other trying to get better deals. Somebody asked Microsoft, well, are you going to do this too? And they said, no, we like it right here. We like having one headquarters. Here's an idea, guys. Maybe you should have four headquarters, and then you could kind of spread the wealth out, right? Has anyone ever driven in the Redmond area at 5 o'clock in the afternoon on a weekday? Have you ever seen what this looks like? They're never going to fix this problem, you know? Yeah. And so anyway, everyone's like, you know, hurry for Microsoft, $500 million. I mean, I guess, but...
Actually, in the scope of things, doesn't sound like that much.
No, it really is. I don't mean to be cynical about it, but I
what are they going to do? Build houses? What are they going to do?
Isn't it interest-free loans for some period of time building?
Yeah, some of it is literally a donations, like they're giving it. Some of it is loans, like you said.
So I would bet the average home in that area is $1 million, right?
So it's got to be up there somewhere. It's probably very similar to the problem you see in Silicon Valley. Yeah. And yeah, I mean, it's terrible. And like a lot of the guys I know from Raphael, for example, lives in Bellevue in an apartment. His rent has gone up. Mm-hmm. And he's like, I'm not going to be able to afford to live here anymore. Like I'm just in an apartment. I don't even own a home. Right next door to where he lives, literally, is the giant tower that Steve Ballmer built. And he lives like a Bond villain at the top. I'm sure there's like helicopters coming and going. It must be, you know, this is unbelievable experience for him. But, you know, there's only so much space, right? The place is now, it's overcrowded. There's traffic problems. Like I said, the traffic in Seattle was designed, the traffic patterns, you know, the highways were designed many years ago to support people coming to the city. And that's not the people going the other way, or they have been for a long time.
And a much smaller city, right?
to a much smaller place. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So it's bucolic there. It used to be. It's beautiful, like lots of big trees. It's very green. I mean, it's gorgeous. I could never afford to live there. They've kind of ruined the place, you know? I mean, it's kind of sad.
Apartment prices there, I sometimes hear from my stepdaughter who lives there, and I'm like, wait, what? That's in Seattle?
Yeah. Like, oh, no, like it's bad. And actually, you know, Amazon, because of their popularity, has done the same thing now to the city, right? So the suburbs that are kind of on the west side of, what is it, Lake Washington or whatever, are now that area is getting blown up as well. And so the whole thing, it's like another version of Silicon Valley. It's too, you know, from a housing perspective, it's too bad.
How many millionaires did Microsoft mint?
I haven't seen an updated number of that in a long time.
Yeah.
Right.
It's really
the stock price is going through the roof again. I'm sure there's some more coming on board.
It's a fascinating problem. Fascinating. You're still a jerk, though, Paul.
Thank you.
I'm just teasing you. What's the power platform?
Okay. So this has nothing to do with that previous story that we just talked about. We just were like lumping things together that had no place in the show notes. But remember when Chris Kapp was on our show and we asked him for hidden jewels, like what are things you think are going to be big in 2019 that we might not think about? One of the things he said was power apps. And I remember thinking, yeah, okay, maybe. But at this meeting with the journalists that Microsoft had last week that I talked about at the start of the show, when you read the transcript, this was a huge theme for Satya Nadella. He just started going off about power apps and flow and talking about the significance for Dynamics 365. And he got really like heady and deep on it, and then also went really high level and started talking about systems of information. And I'm sure everybody in the audience sitting there was like, what the heck is he talking about? And so I understood a bit of it because I covered Dynamics a lot. And so what he was trying to make as his point was, up until now, the way that companies think about ERP and CRM is you have a bunch of data and you need to put it into an ERP or a CRM system. But what's changing now because of artificial intelligence and IoT is companies are collecting all this data. They don't already have it just sitting there. They're getting it all coming in like a fire hose. And now they're trying to figure out, okay, what do we do with all this? So Microsoft's pitch is, hey, we have a way for you to deal with this. We have this common data model and common data service, so you can categorize things in a way that makes sense across apps. You got Flow, which is like if this and that kind of service. You've got Power Apps, which is a way to build apps without really needing to know deeply how to code. And if we pull all these things together, we call it the Power Platform. Add in Power BI for analytics, and we've got a way to make it easier for you if you're thinking about how do I transform my company to do this using our Power Platform. And, you know, I thought, okay, that's a good pitch. But Nadella actually said on the record at this thing that the journalists were at, Microsoft 365, Dynamics 365, and the Power Platform, all on top of what we're doing with Azure, is the core of what we are doing as a company. He's like, these are the three things we're doing. Boom.
Wow.
Notice he did not say Windows. He did not say Office. He called, you know, Windows and Office are part of Microsoft 365, but these are his things. Microsoft 365, Dynamics 365, and the Power Platform.
Paul, we're going to have to find another beat.
Well, I don't know. I like programming. I mean, power apps, maybe.
It's Mary Jo Foley's world. We just live in it.
You know, I try to make things that other people find boring, intriguing.
Wish Paul and I knew how to do that.
Yeah.
Come on, remember the first time we said Hadoop.
I usually just try sucking the air out of the room. Yeah. I don't know.
No, guys, remember? No one knew about Hadoop, and we started talking about it on the show, and it became a thing. I'm telling you, we're ahead of the curve.
When we started the show, we were worried about Microsoft abandoning consumers. Now I think they just have abandoned everybody. I don't know.
No.
If you're not a big business, forget about it.
Well, maybe, but. They want everybody to transform, even the smaller businesses.
Into a big business. Yes.
Yes, right. Right. Grow with us.
Grow with us.
I will take you to Never Neverland.
Yeah, so if you hear about Power Platform, if you hear, just like the early days, if you ever hear about Hadoop, we told you what to think about. If you hear about Power Platform, now, you know what to think
now
about.
Now we know. Is there any Hadoop in the Power Platform?
There's not. Oh. Yeah, that's kind of interesting, right? Like, they don't really talk about databases in there.
But it
although
is BI.
Azure Data.
I mean,
BI's in there. Azure Data Lake is in there. Remember when we talked about that one time with Richard Campbell and Carl when we were all drinking whiskey?
Lakes. The lakes.
Been drinking.
Yeah.
But that's part of the Power Platform indirectly.
Any business intelligence platform is going to use Hadoop.
It does, for sure. I mean, at some point, you would think, because it's part of the big data analytics solutions that they're offering, right?
Right. You are. Okay, Paul.
You know, this is like when I go shopping. And this could be a Best Buy, something I care about. It could be a clothing store.
Yeah.
Could be food shopping. As soon as I walk through the door, the timer goes off, and I have a couple of minutes before I get insane and want to leave.
I know exactly what you mean. I get itchier, antsier, and antsier. I can't focus. Pretty soon I have to just run screaming from the place.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yep.
We're here, Paul. You and me. It's time to run screaming.
No, guys, just embrace your power, inner power app personal.
Wow.
Persona.
Wow. That does really kind of, now you really do kind of start to wonder, does Microsoft really want to consumer play of any kind? None of that is consumer, right? That's the opposite.
So Chris Kapp, remember, and also Satya Nadella this past week, both hinted very strongly that something was going to happen this year. We'll see. I mean, we're not going back, right? There's not going to be a music service. There's not going to be a movie. Well, they actually do have a movie service, but there's not going to be, you know, an MP3 player or whatever this stuff is. They're not going to do content like Apple's doing. I mean, Microsoft and consumer doesn't mean the same thing as what it means for Google, you know?
Right. It means prosumer, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's how I thought about it.
I think there's...
No.
No, why?
It's like HP Enterprise or IBM. IBM doesn't mean consumer or prosumer.
Leo, you got to just fix this. We got a couple years. We're just going to wind this thing down.
Guys,
just gonna ride it out.
Guys, hang on.
Well, they still got Bing.
Well, they got gaming,
and they still have Xbox.
Xbox is awesome. Awesome.
Has Satya ever said that he really likes Fortnite or anything like that?
No, but he has spoken explicitly to gaming as being a big chunk of Microsoft's future.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, and the education thing and Minecraft. That's.
Yep.
But that's really more just like the honey to lure them into the Power BI future.
It is.
Right. Right.
Yeah, you think that pen is for just for fun? No, it's so you can start calculating Power BI type analytics.
They're going to rename things to Power, like Visual Studio become Power Studio.
Well, they have Power. They still have Power Query, right? Power Query, Power BI, Power Apps. It's fun, guys. It's fun.
Leo remains unconvinced.
I'm so depressed.
Don't be depressed.
Paul, okay. This year they're going to sell off Xbox.
I don't think they are.
What?
God, please. Obviously.
What's going through your mind?
One of these things is not like the other.
I've said that a lot, but... I still think that there's this future where gaming does make sense at Microsoft, and it's this future where it's delivered over the cloud, right? And where it goes out to heterogeneous devices. You know, it is a unique strength that they have, that Sony's going to have a hard time duplicating, Nintendo's going to have a hard time.
Everybody's doing it. NVIDIA's doing it. In fact, their whole point everyone's of the new NVIDIA
sort of doing it, but that's like saying everyone made a video service. Everyone made a music service. Everyone does it, but then everyone goes away.
Right.
Yeah. And because because the xCloud stuff's going to run on Azure, they're not going to just like say, okay, we're selling it, blah, decouple that, blah.
Well, by the way, the other thing is, and this is a sad little Cortana-like future for this. The other possibility here is that some other gaming service does win, but they still run on Azure, right?
Right,
because they are one of the few companies that has this infrastructure to support this. Mm-hmm. Plus, they've been doing all this work to make things optimized for gaming and so forth. It is a possibility that, you know, let's say Sony or something, in some bizarre sleeping with the enemy moment, links up with Microsoft to deliver PlayStation games over Azure. And yes, in that scenario, Microsoft doesn't have that forward-leaning success story they can talk about, but they do have this amazing back end that's going to generate income for years and years.
That's just another client win.
No, it's a partnership, Leo. That's a partnership.
AKA partnership.
Yeah. I don't know. You know, we'll see. They are literally one of the few companies that has the infrastructure and the capabilities to do this right now.
Yeah, but Amazon doesn't feel the need to have a gaming service. They just, they know that everybody will use AWS.
No, aren't they doing it, though? Aren't they doing a gaming service?
Yeah, they announced something.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that could be the one thing that pushes people to Microsoft. They're like, oh, wait, I don't want to help Amazon because they're already eating my lunch with many of their other
products. I think most people doing clouds now are multi-homed, to be honest.
They are.
They're not going to throw it all in one basket.
No.
Look, all I need is a place to play Call of Duty. I have it. It's fine. Everything is fine.
That's all he cares.
I just need a warm place to play Call of Duty. That's all I need.
What, Prestige 13 or something? Everything's great.
Some nice slippers, pajamas. Mm-hmm. soup every once in a while.
Ethernet cable, preferably. The latency and Wi-Fi is terrible.
Yeah, yeah.
His Power Apps onesie.
Yeah.
I mean,
as long as it has feet.
Satya Nadella is enterprise focused. He's cloud focused, right? I mean,
yep.
Yeah, but the cloud can still drive certain consumer experiences, and Office is a good example. I think gaming is a good example.
You know, if I up until like 2 years ago, I would have been with you, Leo, and said they're going to sell off Xbox. Now, I just don't think they often thought that.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. I don't think so anymore. I used to think that, but I'm like, nope.
No, the way that Nadella talks about gaming, it's inconceivable that he would sell it off now.
So he loves it. He just loves it.
I think he sees it as a way, another way to earn loyalty from potential Microsoft customers.
Yeah.
That's how I see it.
And he's done right by it. The Xbox strategy has been great. The Minecraft stuff has been great.
Yeah.
I remember the story about the HoloLens was that he got the demo and he said, this can't be gaming.
Right.
You know, he saw the future of that beyond gaming, and he was right about that. Mm. Mm-hmm. As cool as those demos are.
Right.
Yep.
Okay.
I know.
No, wait, you know, it's we'll see. Who knows what's going to happen? No one knows what's going to happen.
No one knows.
I thought maybe that AI, I thought maybe they'd be a big AI player.
I think they will be.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Not just in a virtual assistant way, but in other ways.
Other ways. Okay. Let's take a break. I have to go cry in my beer. Speaking of beer, Mary Jo's beer pick of the week coming up along with the enterprise picks and the tips of the week and the app picks. We call it all the back of the book, and it's just around the corner. But first, a word from our sponsor, the fine folks at Atlassian. Why, they had a big day this past week, didn't they? Very big returns. Turns out, if you take a company and you really focus it on teamwork, on helping IT teams get their job done, collaborate, work together, there's money in them, Nar Hills. It's a good business. Atlassian is a collaboration software company that empowers teams around the world. And they do it, of course, with their flagship products like Jira. That's, you know, everybody knows Atlassian's Jira. But it's not just for developers. Atlassian offers an affordable, reliable set of tools for teams of all types, of all sizes, from DevOps to Agile to IT apps to Ops to ITSM and whatever's next. We are an Atlassian house. I think that's kind of how you say it. Oh, yeah, we're an Atlassian house. We use Jira to plan projects, to get things done. Confluence, we use that to document our methods, our workflows, our strategies. Very good for that. And the nice thing is it all integrates together. Bitbucket, if you've got code repositories. Then there's new stuff like Jira Ops, Ops Genie, Status Page. All these help you detect incidents better, to get the teams involved, alerted, and on the job. Coordinate response efforts to resolve issues faster and keep customers or stakeholders updated. It's kind of like the fire brigade, right? Except they do it all in software. Your teams can choose the tools that are perfect for what you're doing, your current framework, while trusting that as you grow, they will grow with you. And it all integrates seamlessly with the backbone, Jira and Confluence, which helps us, you know, focus. We don't have to bounce around from platform to platform. We get it all done in one place. You can too. Like all of Atlassian's products, the tools for your IT team are easy and free to try. Just go to Atlassian.com and find the ones perfect for your team, Atlassian.com. And just know that they're not only going to be the best designed, the best, most functional, they're going to work together seamlessly, work with what you do, your workflow seamlessly, and they will grow with you. That is the Atlassian promise. Try Atlassian today. Unleash your team's IT potential. Atlassian, Atlassian, Atlassian.com. We use it with pride. Now, speaking of pride, it's time to ride the rainbow with Paul Thurrott and his pick of the week. Tip of the week. Do a tip.
Yeah. So Microsoft, well, I don't know if they announced this, but today it came out, I guess, that Microsoft has built a fake news detector into Microsoft Edge on mobile.
Yeah.
I thought this is kind of strange, you know.
Especially since they're killing Edge.
Edge on mobile will continue as it is.
Oh, on
that's
mobile.
Fine.
Okay.
Nobody really uses it, you know, which is, by the way, too bad. Honestly, Microsoft Edge for mobile is fantastic.
I use it on my iPhone. I like it.
Yeah, it's a great browser. Yeah. And it has some features you don't get in Chrome in particular on mobile, like Reading View and so forth. But, okay, that's kind of interesting. But there's also a bit of a hypocrisy here because when you think about fake news, I mean, obviously it runs the gamut from Russia meddling in the election to, you know, a blogger putting up a post that says, hey, you can save $150 on the Surface Go, and then having like an affiliate link in the article because that's really the reason they wrote the article. Microsoft publishes those kinds of stories on its own their service all the time. And so the other thing is, if you have Microsoft Edge on your desktop on Windows 10, you should look at it right now. Bring up the new tab page and look at all the crap that's on that thing, because if they have some kind of standard for fake news and they were to apply it to their own homepage,
oh, terrible.
This thing would be setting off fireworks. Oh. Like, it's unbelievably terrible. There's a carousel at the top that you flip through the top stories, and every other one of them is an ad. And you go down the page, and it's just ads that are, you know, that masquerade as news stories. You know, Microsoft has some work to do, I would say.
Yeah.
Here, that's not the page, by the way.
No, I got MSNBC. I typed MSN.
Yeah. It's like an MSN type thing.
Yeah.
So this is something I think about a lot because I've gone back and forth on different news aggregation apps, right? So Microsoft has one called Microsoft News. That's not exactly the new tab page, but I'm sure it has some of the same crap in there.
Yeah, yeah.
Apple News is particularly bad, by the way. I think Apple News is actually the worst of the lot. And that's interesting because Apple News is being curated by humans.
Yeah, it's awful.
And yet every time BGR or a tech meme or any site has any kind of nonsense post that's really about them getting affiliate money,
yep,
it's in their news aggregation
app. Yep.
I don't understand that. So I go back and forth, and I will say, for as bad as Microsoft is on the desktop, I looked at these today again just to kind of get a little tally. Actually, Microsoft News on mobile is pretty good. They do have sponsored stories, but they're kind of clearly sponsored. They don't aggregate a lot of those crap posts that you see in the other guys, Google and Apple News in particular, really bad at that. And so it's kind of goofy to me that in this era of AI and, you know, in hand curation in Apple's case, that these new news aggregation apps are actually really bad at aggregating news. And it probably gets worse over time because you start telling it what you like, and then you start getting ads for stuff you like. And that's really the point of the app, isn't it? I mean, when it comes down to it. So my tip, such as it is, because it's not much of a tip, because I don't really have an answer here about what is the best one. I will say on mobile, in my opinion, actually the Microsoft one probably is the best. On the desktop, though, the Microsoft stuff is almost certainly the worst. It's terrible. So I guess I don't know what kind of a tip that is, but just choose accordingly. I mean, well, I don't, because I really don't have the answer. I mean, I found it kind of interesting that they came out with this today. And they went after a particular publication. I think that was how it came to light. The Daily News in the UK, which is one of those kind of UK-specific rags that's really confusing to people from the United States because we just don't really do news that way, almost National Enquirer-esque kind of stuff. And they took great exception to this Microsoft thing, which I kind of understand. But, you know, Microsoft, were they to point that lens back at their own site, would probably be sending off the same warnings. I find that to be hypocritical. It's too bad. Anyway,
Read about the most charming retro diner in every state?
Yeah. No, I read this really interesting article in People about how Bradley Cooper is an excellent parent. But you know what? Seriously, folks, I don't understand.
Five ingredient, no bake chocolate peanut butter bars?
Yeah. No, it's not that. It's like, save $50 on this incredible pair of Sony noise-canceling headphones. Like, are you kidding me?
I fell for this. I wish I could remember which site, but it's one of the big sites, right?
Yeah.
They said, oh, you won't believe the deals you can get right now. You can get, an ultrasonic Oral-B toothbrush for $50. So I ordered two. It's not. It's a fake. It's from the Smile Bright store.
Oh, jeez.
Platinum Sonic toothbrush.
Right.
It's a fake. And then I ordered two, and then I got one of those, and then I got this from My Life, My Shop, Ultimate Spin, supposedly a different company, but gosh, they sure look the same.
Yep.
This was a scam, and it was from a major tech news site.
Look, everyone does. Just so people understand this, I mean, this is an issue we've certainly run into. The advertising model that used to run the web is dead. It's just dead. And you can't really make money off of straight up ads anymore, unless you just destroy your site with ads, I guess. And so different sites try different schemes to try to make money in a different fashion, right? You'll see the save some percent on a, or choose your own price on a Microsoft Office Now bundle or whatever nonsense that is. There are sites who just sell you crap through their own stores maybe, or through third party stores. You know, at Throughout.com, we've tried like the premium model where people actually pay for us to write, and it seems honest and transparent, and it works to a certain degree. But obviously, the majority of people don't want to pay anything. You know, they've been trained not to pay for anything on the internet. So that doesn't work for a lot of people as well. And it's hard, you know, but I guess we all, I don't know. I mean, here we are.
Do you ever use the Google News app on your phone?
Yeah,
it's pretty good. Yeah. Of the big ones, it's the best, I think. Still gets.
It depends on what you're looking for. Obviously, I know. You know, when I look at like the technology section in each of these apps, the Google one does have ads in there that look like stories. You know, but they're usually pretty easy to spot. The Apple one is the worst. It amazes me how bad the Apple
fall
one
for.
Is. Like
they fall for every.
Native, I have no idea.
Native content story ever.
It can only be on purpose.
By the way,
it's crazy how bad.
I apologize for not sending you your Christmas gifts, but that's why. I never even opened these. I was so perturbed.
You open it up and there'll be like a candy bar phone inside.
Now I'm thinking, I bet you it doesn't even work, right? It doesn't look like it has a power cord.
Oh my God.
Anyway, let's cheer up because you've got an app pick of the week. By the way, this is Paul's new beat. He'll be covering to-do apps from now on.
Well, yeah, I mean, if you think that tip was terrible, wait till you hear my app pick. the reason I say that is because I've chosen this one before. It's Microsoft To-Do is an app that is replacing another app that Microsoft bought, and there's a lot of bad vibes around that still to some degree. And it kind of sat still for a year or more where they didn't really update it. But I would say the last year and a half, we might be coming in on more time than that even, but let's say year and a half. Microsoft has really been going gangbusters on this thing. And this is a good example of you have a feedback loop, you listen to what people want, and you actually do it, and they're doing it. You know, and so if you have interest in a to-do app that runs across, you know, Windows, the web, mobile, and it's evolving at a really rapid rate. They've just redid the UX on, I think it was on the web or Windows 10, I don't remember, but it's a really great full-featured app, and they've done the work to integrate it on the back end with all of their task and to-do type entry points, whether it's in Outlook or Outlook.com or Outlook on the web, or even like Sticky Notes has some kind. It will soon have some form of integration with to-do, so you can do like bulleted lists, and they're going to sync across. And there's all kinds of stuff going on here, so it's just something to look at. I mean, you know, people kind of investigate this stuff from time to time. This is not as sticky as like an email application or a word processor or anything like that, but it is kind of a nice area that's ripe for experimentation. And I think the Microsoft one is really, really good. Something to look at, and it's everywhere.
Cool. And now, ladies and gentlemen, the moment you've all been waited for. The Enterprise.
The Hadoop pick of the week.
The power pick of the week.
Yes.
I have two Enterprise picks this week, and the first one is about Azure. This is really interesting. If you're a Microsoft customer, especially a small, mid-sized business customer who buys Azure services currently, your world is about to change in March. Microsoft is going to start selling you Azure directly. You know, this is the company that prides itself on how much it goes through partners. It's been signing up all kinds of cloud solution providers to sell customers Azure services and other services. Well, forget all that. Now Microsoft's going to sell this to you instead. You're going to have a direct billing relationship with Microsoft through this thing called the Microsoft Customer Agreement, the MCA. And on the surface, this sounds pretty good. If you're a customer, it's meant to be a simpler contract. It's only 11 pages. And if you know how Microsoft licensing contracts are, that's small. It's all digital. And there'll be no interruption to any of your services if you're a current customer. It's just a change in the way the billing relationship is happening.
But will all my files be where I left them?
All your files will be right where you left them. All your channel partners will be really angry, though.
Uh-oh.
All those people who've been signing up as cloud solution providers and systems integrators who, you know, a lot of these people are managed service providers, so they'll continue to add value on top of this. But there are some people whose business it is to just sell you Azure and Azure services with very little value add. Uh-oh. Those people are not happy about this because it's like, hey, wait, I had a direct billing relationship with customers,
right,
and now
right.
that's going away.
Right. Now what do I do?
Right. Now what do I do for a business?
Yeah.
So Microsoft's saying they're not intending to cut out partners, that they're just encouraging them to go further up the stack, which we've heard all along as Microsoft increasingly got into the cloud business, and you're hearing more of this again. I'm sure it'll make for a fun partner conference this year. But if you're a customer starting in March, watch for notices about this new thing called the Microsoft Customer Agreement. That's Enterprise Pick 1.
Cool.
Enterprise Pick 2, though, you want to hear this one. Has to do with Power Apps and the Power Platform. Guys.
Okay.
Hold on. It's better than you think.
Yeah.
So, talked about Power Apps, Power Platform, but the main thing that applies to is Dynamics 365, which is Microsoft's ERP and CRM platform. So just like Windows, Microsoft's gone to a twice yearly update schedule for Dynamics also. There's going to be an April update and an October update, just like Windows. The April update, as of this week, the release notes for that came out. There were 300 pages of release notes. I read them so you don't have to. I did a little synopsis on my site of all the different things that are coming, hundreds of new features. I didn't mention all of them, but I gave you kind of a high-level view. Most of them seem incremental to me, although I'm sure if you're a Dynamics customer, there's always favorite features that you'll see that you're like, wait, how did she call that incremental? It's huge. But yeah, they're updating everything. The finance and operations and all the different talent apps they have, and the two HoloLens apps that they have, Remote Assist and Layout, are getting updated. Those now come under the Dynamics 365 label. Field Services getting updated. And of course, the Power Platform also getting updated. So you may want to just go and check out my post. I've got a link to the release notes. The dates you need to know is the release notes are out now. The first preview of these, all these different features is coming out in a couple weeks. And then April 5th is when this will be rolling out to the mainstream, starting to roll out. Because these are all the new features that you're going to see in Dynamics and the Power Platform between April and September. And then there'll be a whole bunch of other new features in the October update when that comes out. So that's my second tip.
Thank you. What do you think, Paul? Have we earned a beer?
Oh, I'm sorry. Are we still on?
Yes.
Yeah, come on, man. You got to learn these things.
His to-do list, number one, get a new job.
I have another update I just saw on Twitter that they're adding file attachments for it to Microsoft to-do as well.
Do you use to-do? Have you
no,
used
I
it?
Do not. I don't.
I know.
Would you use it if they renamed it Hadoop?
I put to-do type stuff in Calendar.
Yeah.
Me too.
Yeah,
I do too.
Yeah.
I know.
Yeah. I think there are just two different ways of doing it, and I can't. I like the look of it. I like the idea of it.
It looks nice.
Yep.
What do you got for us? Something refreshing, something frothy, chilled.
I have something that meets all those check boxes. Plus, it's going to make you feel good about yourself. How about that?
Yeah. This
I need
is cool.
This, Mary Jo.
I like this. No, this is good. This is for a good cause. I like
it
this.
Is.
Yeah.
So Sierra Nevada Brewing, one of their main breweries is in Chico, California. And, you know, that was right near the campfire fires. So they came up with this idea of, why don't we do a beer that's going to benefit the people who are affected by the campfire stuff.
What a nice idea.
So they've come up with Sierra Nevada Resilience Butte County Proud IPA.
Oh,
I have not had this yet.
That's nice.
I have not had this yet. But what's cool is they get donations from all kinds of suppliers and distributors. They gave the recipe out to breweries all around the U.S. So other breweries are going to brew this too and donate their proceeds to the fire victims.
Wow.
So it's pretty cool. A pretty cool idea. I didn't even know about this, but the Jester Man on Twitter tipped me off to it and said, hey, you should watch for this. It's going to come to New York also. So yeah, it's called Sierra Nevada Resilience Butte County Proud IPA. And I don't know if every brewery will also call it that or how they'll do it, but 100% of the profits going to the Campfire Relief Fund.
Wow, 1,400 breweries are going to have volunteered to brew resilience.
Yeah.
Wow.
Pretty cool, right?
Yeah, that is really neat. They're all stepping up.
They're all stepping up. And it is great. An IPA, I know, Paul, but it's for a good cause.
Man, I had a delicious Lagunitas IPA the other day, and it's so good. It is so citrusy and refreshing.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm sure this Butte County Resilience will be the best beer you ever had.
You know what? Sierra makes great IPAs.
I love Sierra.
They're one of the classics.
They're big. Yeah. You know, they're kind of, they're no longer like a craft brewery, but I think that's very good beer. It's very good. What do you think? Are they a craft brewery?
I think they probably technically can claim to be.
Like Sam Adams is a craft brewer.
Yeah,
I know.
That's right.
They're all
owned
by big companies.
Between,
right. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, even the Lagunitas is Heineken now, you know. But
exactly.
I just, around here, maybe just because they've been around for so long, but they're kind of more thought of as a mainstream beer, you know.
Sierra. Yeah, they are.
Yeah, yeah.
But, yeah. I think it's admirable and a nice idea.
They're good. Well, I think you're a nice idea, and you, and you, and you, and I am so glad you came here for our very last Windows Weekly ever.
Oh,
next week.
It's now called Power Apps Weekly.
Power Apps Weekly. No. Well, it's not over yet, but we will be back next week to discuss what is happening in Redmond and why, and then when is this Mobile World Congress thing? It's in a month, right? Thereabouts?
Yeah, February. Right?
Okay. So we will we'll remind you then that we're going to be doing a live stream of that if Microsoft does. Mary Jo will join me at 8 in the morning.
Only 11 for me.
I know. You could have some resilience before that.
That's right.
Have a wonderful day. You'll find Mary Jo Foley at allaboutmicrosoft.com. That's her ZDNet blog. Paul Thurrott at Thurrott.com. That's his site. And, of course, leanpub.com was where the Windows 10 field guide is published, and you can get yourself a copy. And I guess we'll be back here next Wednesday, right about 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern, 1800 UTC. You can watch live at twit.tv/live. And if you do that, by the way, join the chat room. Lots of nice people in there watching live with you. It's kind of a community of people all wearing their Windows Phone t-shirts.
Oh,
and they're Microsoft sweaters.
I seem to have dropped onto a knife. Hold on.
And if you can't be here live, you can always get it on demand. We make on demand versions of everything we do available, so you can listen at your leisure as you run or work or whatever it is you drive to work. Just go to your favorite podcast app and download Windows Weekly, or subscribe. That way you'll get it automatically. Or just get it from our website, twit.tv/ww. But whatever you do, make sure you're back here next Wednesday. Thanks, Paul. Thanks, Mary Jo. We'll see you next time on Windows Weekly.